Bas Yaakov Halevi, Gene Gross, whose yard site is this evening, Zion Adar, also the yard site of Moshe Rabbeinu. As we know, tomorrow we're going to have a Zion Adar. See him. Not Kedai to come hear me speak, because I'm only going to speak for 3.5 minutes, but it is Kedai to hear Rabbi Kriegsman speak, who is the featured speaker, and to be Mechabe, the Sefer Kadisha, for all of the incredible work that they do. So this week's parsha, we learn a lot about the Big Day Kahuna, and one of the begadim that we learn about is the Urim Betumim. So we're going to discuss an interesting shaila that's discussed in the Achronim. Many Achronim have interesting thoughts about this very shaila. And you'll say that it's not so relevant, but we'll see in a couple of minutes how it is extremely relevant. Halacha l'maisa is relevant to a major technology breakthrough that they've come up with in the last couple of years. And we'll see how the shaila exactly relates to this very question that the Achronim discuss here. So the Gemara has a discussion in Yuma on Daf Ayin Gimel and Machlokes Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. What happens when somebody goes and confronts the Urim V'Tumim and asks a question of the Urim V'Tumim? As we know, the Urim V'Tumim gave an answer. So how was that answer given? So the Machlokes Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan is of the opinion that what happened was, let's say I asked the Urim V'Tumim, just for argument's sake, should I go eat dinner tonight? I assume that's not what the Kohen Gadol was asking, but let's say you're going to ask and the answer is yes. So the Urim V'Tumim, says Rabbi Yochanan, it would light up Chaf and Lamed, the two letters Kain, I'm sorry, Chaf and Nun, would light up, and they would give the answer to the Kohen Gadol that he should go ahead and do as he had asked. Reish Lakish is up. So 1 second. Let's first get through the Gemara, then we'll get to the Shaila. So Reish Lakish is of the opinion, no. Reish Lakish says no. When you had the answer, it's not just that two letters lit up. The letters not only lit up, but they also joined together. Osios Mitztarfos. The two letters came together and formulated the answer. It's not that the Kohen Gadol had to do work and figure out what exactly the Urim V'Tumim was telling him. No, everything was prepackaged. Urim V'Tumim presented the answer exactly as is, even though that was a miracle because the letters were not one next to the other. Still, says Reish Lakish that is what happened. So the Achronim have a discussion. What about asking the Urim V'Tumim on Shabbos? So again, according to Rabbi Yochanan, the Achronim say there's no Shaila at all. The Reish Rav talks about the Sinas Tshuvas. There's no Shaila according to Rabbi Yochanan. If the letters just lit up, it doesn't mean anything. Why? Because the Gemara in Shabbos says you only chayiv on Kosev once you write two Osios. So what happens if I write one letter on this and one letter on that, two pieces of paper, but it's osios meruchako zemizeh. The letters are not one next to the other. So we assume the Gemara says in Shabbat Chuvdala that is not considered a malach of tziva. That's not kosev. So over here also, if the two letters are shining, but they're not next to each other, so there's no shaila at all. However, there are those achronim who say that according to... What?
About the actual lighting.
Oh, so the lighting is a good question. It could be just protruded.
LED.
Only Midirabban and LED, so it's a good question. But according to Reish Lakish, that the letters not only stuck out, but the letters even came together. So the Achronim want to say that maybe, according to Reish Lakish, it would be a malacha to go ahead and ask a shaila of the Urim V'Tumim b'Shabbos. Why? Because the letters are coming together, and that's a malacha of Kosev. Okay, so it's an interesting chiddush, but we're going to show in a couple of minutes why this might not be so simple. There are two reasons why the Achronim don't like this. So reason number one is the following. The Rush writes in Maseches Pesachim, he has a very famous kasha in Perek Arvei Pesachim, for those who are learning it, here in the shul. So the Rush has a kasha. What's the halacha? The Gemara says that Moshe Rabbeinu, on the last day that he was alive, the Medrash tells us that he wrote 13 Sifrei Torah. 13 Sifrei Torah, so ask the Rush. How was Moshe Rabbeinu able to write 13 Sifrei Torah? We know in Shulchan Aruch it says the reason why we say Tzidkatzcha by Mincha on Shabbos afternoon is because what? Moshe Rabbeinu, Tzidik Adin. Moshe Rabbeinu passed away on Shabbos afternoon. Machlok is a big shaila, but the Pashto says Moshe Rabbeinu died Shabbos. This is why the minhag has developed that we say Tzidkatzcha Shabbos afternoon. If that's the case, how did Moshe Rabbeinu write 13 Sifrei Torah on the day that he died? This is Shabbos. How did he let her write Sifrei Torah? That's the kasha that the Rosh asks. Other Rishonim asks also, Tosfos has a Menachos, the question, how can you say Moshe Rabbeinu writes Ben Meah Ve'Esrim Shana Anochi Hayom? Moshe Rabbeinu says today I'm going to die. I'm 120 years old, and today was Yom HaMisa. Yom HaMisa was on Shabbos. So Tosfos asks the kasha, how could it be? And Moshe Rabbeinu wrote that the same kasha as the Rosh. Had Moshe Rabbeinu write 13 Sifrei Torah if in fact the last day of his life was Shabbos? So Tosfos has an argument that perhaps really Moshe Rabbeinu wrote it the day before. It wasn't the last day. Okay, but the pasha is not like that. Ben Meah Ve'Esrim Shana Anochi Hayom means today. So how can you explain this? So there's a famous answer given by the Shalah. This is quoted in the Tshuvas of the Sam Sefer, that the Shalah says there was something called Hashba'as HaKulmus. What does that mean? It means Moshe Rabbeinu did some nace, he did some miracle, he did some magic, and Mimela, the Kulmus was able to write, Alpi Shem Havaya, whatever it was, Moshe Rabbeinu used Shemus HaKadoshim, and Mimela, the Sifrei Torah were written on their own. That's what the Shalah HaKadosh answers. So what does that help? Says the Chassam Sofer, the reason why it helps is because the only time I'm chayiv mishum ksiva b'Shabbos is when I actually do the act of writing. But if I don't do the act of writing, I just use Shemus HaKadoshim and then all of a sudden the kulmas right by itself, that's not my act, that's not my melacha b'Shabbos, so that will not be a problem. The problem is, according to that, Rav Avadi Yosef has a beautiful tanya in his tshuvas. He says, the Gemara says in Sukkah and Dav Zayin, an interesting sugya where the Gemara talks about migud avidofen le'nisukah avidofen le'nishabbos, that we find sometimes when Shabbos coincides with other halachas, the two halachas come together. We don't have time to get into that now, but Rav Avadi Yosef points out, if you're going to say that this was considered a ksiva sefer Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu's 13 sefer Torah that he wrote were pashtos, they were kasher sefer Torah. So if you're going to assume that they were kasher enough, this ksiva was good enough to be machshir 13 sefer Torah, so then you should also migud haviksiva le'inin sefer Torah, haviksiva nami le'inin Shabbos. As Shavayle, the din of Shabbos also like the Gemara in Sukkah Dav Zayin. Okay, that's the kasha that he has on this shalav. But be it as it may, we generally assume that if you hold like the shalav, that there was hashbas, hakulm was going on, that that's what Moshe Rabbeinu was doing. So then there was no isra at all because Moshe Rabbeinu was not involved in the act, in the melacha, because it happened on its own. And something that happens via a miracle, something that happens with Shem Havaya, with all these kinds of things, something that's supernatural, so we don't assume that that is a violation of melacha, even if you get the desired result. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Aleph, and this is quoted in Shulchan Aruch and Shin Chaf Ches, in El Chashabbos, so the Gemara says, what happens if I have an animal that's going to be mazik somebody? So you're not allowed to say Dan Shabbos is a melacha. So I don't want to violate the Isur Tzedah. It's not really going to be mazik. It's not like we have a tiger, a lion in the room that's going to really be mazik someone in a dangerous way. But it's annoying, let's say. You have an animal that I can't trap it, and it's very annoying for us. So what do you do? And you don't have a nachri around, Amir la'akum, perhaps it would have been mutter, so what do you do? So the Gemara says, Loch shen l'chishos nechashem ha'akravim b'Shabbos. So what does that mean? It means you use some sort of magic. You whisper, you say some sort of shemos, and memela, you somehow get rid of the problem. So how do you get rid of the problem? So the Mishnah Berurah explains, even though by doing all these shemos, by doing all this magic, you're going to trap the animal into a specific corner of the room, and it won't be able to get out, and you're going to say, I'm violating the Isur Tzedah b'Shabbos. Says the Mishnah Berurah, no, that's not a problem. Why is it not a problem? Because since I'm doing it al yidei neis, I'm not really doing it via any natural means of catching an animal. It's not the normal way I would ever catch an animal. It's a miraculous way to catch an animal. So says the Mishnah Berurah, that's what the Gemara assumes, and the Shulchan Aruch talks this way, that loch shel nechishos, I'm allowed to do that on Shabbos because that's not constituting any sort of malacha because I don't really do it. Okay. But by malacha, it's more so. It's that you can't have hanhaga nisis to create a malacha. Even if I get the desired result, it's still not considered malacha. On the Tshuvas Leiv Chaim, Reb Chaim Palagi has a suffix also. It's funny shayla, but he has a suffix. What's the din? If, let's say, I have a delika, I have a fire on Shabbos, and I don't know what's going to be, and the fire is raging. So he says, as we all know, there's certain shamus a person can use and put out a fire. Not familiar, but I guess in his generation they all knew. So what's the deal? Am I allowed to say these shemos? Am I allowed to do these miracles in order to put out the fire by not even being over the malacha of kibbuy b'Shabbos? The fire is going to go out. So he says, well, maybe since it's happening in a miraculous way, it's not really considered to be a malacha at all. And we know that the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Chacham Tzvi, Siman Nun Hei Hilchos Tefila, where the Chacham Tzvi has a suffix, what happens if I create a person through Sefer Yetzirah or something like that? Can I count it toward a minion? And the Chacham Tzvi brings a funny raya. He says the Gemara has a story about Rav Elazar Shichar Avdo. Rav Elazar was Meshachar his Eved. He came to Shul once and he saw there was no minion, so he was Meshachar the Eved. Asked the Chacham Tzvi, what do you mean? Why were you Meshachar the Eved? You violated an Isser Essay. Why do you do it? So the Gemara says, because Asay Dechalos Essay. What do you mean? You could have created a person with Sefer Yetzirah easy. Rav Elazar, you don't think you knew how to do that? So if Rav Elazar knew how to do it, so why did he not do it? So he says the Chacham Tzvi, you see a raya that a person, a golem that's created like they say for Yitzirah, they and is not considered a real person. Okay? Interesting. Selfik, the Beis Shmuel has an Ebenezer. Also, what's the din of a person if a woman is Mazana with a miraculous person, with a golem? Do you consider her Asura Abayla? All these cases, the Achronim talk about in many different contexts, but basically, with regard to Ilcha Shabbos, we assume that if somebody does a malacha, and even if you get the intended result via that Hanhaga Nisis, somehow you get the result through a miracle, that would not be considered a malacha. You can't trace that back to me. And therefore, we would assume over here that perhaps it's not so simple. When a person would ask a shayla of Urim V'Tumim, and the Urim V'Tumim would give an answer, even if you assume, like Rish Lakish, that the letters came together, named Mitzdar of Zemizeh, you can't assume that that's a malacha. Why? Because that's a malacha that comes about through Hanhaga Nisis. That's not a normal way to do malacha. That's not a normal way for a person to ask a question of somebody else. And when that's the answer that one is given, that would not be constituting a malacha at all. The second possibility that the Achronim give as to why it would be permissible to ask a shayla of the Urim V'Tumim b'Shabbos is the following. It all begins with the Das Akenim Bala Yatosis, who write on Parshas Baloscha. The pasuk says by the man, Eis Asher Tofu Ofu, Eis Asher Tevashelu Bashelu. So the Gemara, so the Bala Yatosis asked the Kasha, what do you mean? By the man, how did they bake and how did they cook? It says that a man, you have to collect on Erev Shabbos two portions a month, one for Friday, one for Shabbos, and make sure you make and everything. Make sure you prepare everything before Shabbos. What do they have to do? Had they baked something? So we know the Gemara says in Yuma they used to think about it, and then it became that item. Question, did it actually become that item? Did it only taste like that item? Okay, a whole shayla, but Lamaisa asked the Bali Atosis, why do I have to prepare everything before Shabbos? Esa shor tofu ofa, esa shor tova shayla ba shayla. What am I doing? I'm not putting it in the oven. They didn't have an oven in the Midbar. So what does it mean? What's the whole pasuk? What does it mean? And not only that, the Gemara in Beitza learns a halacha from this pasuk. Hachana de Rabba. So how can you learn a halacha? What's the pasuk talking about? What does it mean? So the Daf Kenei Bali Atosis says, you're right. You know why it was a malacha? Because how did it come about if I wanted to have a cookie, if I wanted to have challah in the midbar, how did I get it? I didn't just think. I had to say, I want this man to turn into challah. So he says, b'dibur yisab ben maisa, since I had to speak and I had to articulate what I wanted the man to taste like, that constitutes a malacha. However, Zakhtar Zasakena Mivalei Atosis, let's say I would have just been able to do a b'machshava. Let's say I would have just been able to think, and then this would have turned into bread, and that would have turned into soup, and this would have turned into something else. That would not be a malacha. Why? Because a malacha, idei machshava, is not considered a malacha. Even though somehow we miraculously figured out a way that my machshava could do a malacha, it doesn't matter, but that's not called a maisa. In order to do a malacha on Shabbos, you have to actively be involved in a maisa. That's what the Daf Kenei Mivalei Atosis writes. Rabbi Kiveger has the following suffix, the Sharatzion quotes in Nuchas Sukkah. So what's the din? I have a sukkah, you know, a sukkah cannot be l'mayla me'asr mamma. So you have a sukkah that's too high. So what do? I can't knock down the sukkah. It's too expensive. I don't want to knock it down and buy a new one. So how do I figure out a way to use the sukkah even though it's higher than esr mamma? So the Gemara says you could put things on the floor. You could put items on the floor to be memayit, the open space, to be memayit the halal. So how do I do that? So the Gemara says, let's say I put pillows and blankets and beds inside of the sukkah. So Gemara says that doesn't help. Why? Because you don't want your pillows and blankets to become a part of the ground. And even if you want them to become a part of the ground, it's batla daita esadat kol b'nei adam. Most normal people don't want their pillows and blankets to become a part of the ground, so that's not really considered being memayit achalon. Let's say I put a table in there, it's not good enough. I have to put something that's actually attached to the ground. So says the Shulchan Aruch, what if I put afar in there? What if I put dirt in the sukkah? And by putting the dirt, I want that it should be memayit the space from the schach to the ground. So it says that you have to be mevatalit. You have to say, I want that this dirt should become bottle to the ground, and then, once it becomes bottle to the ground, then it's able to be memayit to halal and make it less than 20 amos. So what happens like this? I put out the dirt before Shabbos, but I forgot to be mevatalit. So Rabbi Kiveger has a suffix, well, what's the malacha going to be if I'm mevatalit and machshava on Shabbos? We know by bitul chametz. If a person, Rachmana Litzlan, finds chametz on Pesach, he's able to be mevatalit on Pesach because it's just a machshava. The machshava b'lavad is sagi. You could be mevatal your chametz with machshava. So it says Rabbi Kiveger, maybe you should say over here also, if I put out the dirt before Yantif began, and now I realize, oh yeah, I forgot to be mevatal the dirt to the floor of the sukkah, and I wanted to. Why? In order to be machshir my sukkah, says Rabbi Kiveger, maybe you shouldn't be allowed to do that because it's makabe patish. By my being mevatal the offer on the bottom of the sukkah, now I'm creating a situation where the sukkah is not kosher. So that's what Rabbi Kiveger says. He's not sure about it, and in fact, the Sharatzion quotes Rabbeinu Menach, one of the Rishonim, who has the same suffix, and he says it's mutter. Why? Because since the whole bittul only happens b'machshava, all I have to do, I don't have to verbalize, I don't have to speak it out, I'm not doing any maisa. I'm just b'machshava, I'm being mevatel, the offer that's on the bottom of my sukkah. So when he's doing a malacha b'machshava, that does not constitute a malacha, and therefore that would be permissible on Shabbos. The Rishonim have a discussion also, what about being mafresh chuma b'machshava? Let's say I have chuma in a whole big pot, and I couldn't be mafresh before Shabbos for whatever reason. Now I realize on Shabbos that I need something from the pot. Aye, but I can't eat it, it's tevel. So I can't be mafresh b'yadayim, but what about being mafresh b'machshava? I say, I want that these apples from this side of the pot should be chuma. So the Rishonim have a machlokas, well, it's only b'machshava, so maybe that shouldn't be considered a malacha. Or maybe on the other hand, it's mesakin mana, because now everything becomes mutter. So this is a big issue that comes up. What comes up halacha l'maisa is that when a person does a malacha b'machshava, one cannot consider that to be a malacha on Shabbos. You don't violate an issue. So over here as well, when you ask a question of the Urim V'Tumim, did you have to verbalize the question? Do you have to verbalize the question, or do you just stand in front of the Urim V'Tumim and you think, hey, I have the following problem, and all of a sudden the Urim V'Tumim magically was able to answer your question. So if the whole thing just happened in machshava, and I didn't really do any malacha, any pula, any dibur even, in order to bring about the result, the reaction from the Urim V'Tumim, so perhaps that's not considered a malacha at all, and that would be permissible on Shabbos. How does this make an afkamina la'alacha? So in the last 2 minutes, let's just think about the following scenario. There's a new technology called a brain-computer interface, which has been spoken about a lot in the halachic literature, and this is what we call a BCI. So my friend Rabbi Josh Herbert, who's soon going to be a doctor as well, sent me this interesting write-up about a BCI, which the whole shiloh, the crux of the shiloh, comes down to our discussion by Urim V'Tumim. So BCI is essentially a direct communication pathway between one's brain and an external device. Unbelievable technology. What does it mean? By placing something either on the scalp or the gray matter of the brain itself, scientists are now able to detect signals and interpret what function or movement they were designated to generate. It's an unbelievable technology that they came up with. Thus, when I think or I intend on clenching my fist, right? So normally my body has to subconsciously think. In order for my fist to go like that, my brain has to think about it. Scientists can now direct that electrical energy to an external device like a robotic hand and teach it to clench upon receiving those specific signals. Unbelievable thing. So therefore, if there's a person who has an amputated arm and now they have a prosthetic, right?
Bionics.
What?
Bionics.
Right? So this is an amazing technology. BCI now allows scientists to create a makeshift nervous system rerouting the brain signals generated when one wishes to move his body and sending them either to the limbs that his brain has previously unable to communicate with, let's say a person has paralysis on a certain limb, or to an external device like a prosthetic limb, which is an unbelievable thing. So he goes on to a whole bunch of things, and they said they made video games for children that you don't even have to do anything anymore. They could just put a cap on top of your head, and when the kids are thinking that the character in the video game should jump, so it will jump right away because it can read all the signals that your brain is giving off. So when you think about something like that, so let's say Rahmanul Islam, somebody has an amputated arm, and now they have a prosthetic arm, and the person thinks on Shabbos, I want to write. So the prosthetic arm is going to pick up a pen and start writing on Shabbos. Am I doing a malacha? I'm not doing any malacha. It's not me. On the other hand, it's coming through my machshava. What do you mean? But the whole thing is directed through the energies that are coming out of my brain. So you'll say the same way if my brain sends a message to my arm, to my real arm, that I should write. So you're going to say, I'm obviously in violation of a malacha. But what if it sends a message to my prosthetic arm? What if it sends a message to an exterior device, an external device, something else, and it tells that other device that it should do malacha? What would you say? Is that considered a malacha or not? What about, let's say, Ksiva Sefer Torah? Let's say by Moshe Rabbeinu. What if I would have one of these prosthetic arms writing a Sefer Torah? Well, the whole energy has really begun from my machshava. So you're going to say, well, I started the whole system, I started the whole process, so that should be considered like my ksiva. Well, not so fast. Maybe if it's only started, generated from my machshava, that's not good enough. And specifically by Shabbos, we find that it cannot be considered a malacha if a person only has a machshava, which brings about the desired result. So this is a major shaila, and what it comes down to is this question by the Urim V'Tumim. That's what the Acharonim quote. What's the halacha about the Urim V'Tumim? Am I allowed to ask a shaila of the Urim V'Tumim if I know that the whole thing is only going to come about by my machshava? I'm thinking about it, and the Urim V'Tumim is now giving me a reaction, giving me a result, and now the malacha of ksiva is happening. It doesn't matter. The Das Kenim Yivala says it's right. Even if I would have cooked them on, but the whole cooking process only happens through my machshava, that would not have been a problem. Only when I do a dibur do we consider that possibly to be a ma'isa. For sure, if I do something via dayim, also considered a ma'isa, but doing something via machshava alone would not be considered a ma'isa. So this has major nafkaminas lahalacha nowadays. When we have this kind of technology, what would we say about actions that are done through my machshava, but really through an external device? Would that be considered to be a machshava ha'oseres, the malacha of the Shabbos, or would he say, no, that's a totally external ma'isa that's happening, and it doesn't relate back to my malacha on Shabbos itself? So that's a big shiloh. Tosis has the suffix in a few places. Tosis has the suffix in Zvachim Daf Beis in a few places, whether we would consider lishma. Do you need to actually verbalize the lishma, or is it good enough if you just have machshava? So we go to Chumra and we say, well, by Ksivas Sefer Torah, you don't want to take any chances. So we say, l'shem mitzvah ksivas sefer Torah. Or when you're fixing your tefillin, you say, l'shem mitzvah tefillin. But the Mishnah Berurah has the suffix from that Tosis in Zvachim Daf Beis. Is that so simple? Do you really have to have a verbalization of your machshava, or is it good enough just to have the machshava alone? So that's an interesting question.
Why are we not allowed to think about solving business problems on Shabbos?
Oh, so you're going to say, the Gemara says, but Dibur is asur. The Gemara says that thinking about things that are asur on Shabbos is mutter.
But that's a double
code. Yeah.
You're not supposed to think about business problems.
No, the Gemara says, hiru mutter. The Gemara says, be maharer about things is mutter. Yeah. Verbalizing it, dibur is us. Okay?